From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Hillary Clinton takes it to Trump. Texas floods. Guerrilla uproar. Hillary Clinton tore into presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump at a speech in San Diego yesterday.
He is not just unprepared. He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
Donald Trump did not hold back in his response. Here he is at a rally in California last night.
After what she said about me today in her phony speech, that was a phony speech. That was a Donald Trump hit job. I will say this. Hillary Clinton has to go to jail, okay? She has to go to jail.
And a gorilla killed at the Cincinnati Zoo after a three-year-old fell into the gorilla habitat. We heard the tape of the mother's frantic call to 911. Be calm, she calls to her son.
Be calm. Be calm. Be calm. Be calm. Who's dragging my son? I can't watch this.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Christina Bellantoni of the Los Angeles Times, Trudy Rubin of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of Hillary Clinton's broadside against Trump, Trump's knocks on the media, on Clinton, on the judge handling the Trump University case? And what about the gorilla? And Texans, are you finding dry land? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Los Angeles, Christina Bellantoni, Assistant Managing Editor for Politics at the Los Angeles Times. Big primary coming up there next week. Christina, welcome back to On Point.
Greetings.
And with us from Philadelphia, Trudy Rubin, Foreign Affairs Columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Trudy, welcome back to you as well.
Nice to be here, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Christina, and Trudy.
Hillary Clinton, what do you think of Donald Trump? We heard a lot yesterday. Here she was.
Donald Trump's ideas aren't just different. They are dangerously incoherent. They're not even really ideas, just a series of bizarre rants, personal feuds, and outright lies.
What does she believe in foreign policy? Here was Clinton again.
I believe in strong alliances, clarity in dealing with our rivals, and a rock-solid commitment to the values that have always made America great.
Give Donald Trump the nuclear code, Clinton says. No, thank you. He's temperamentally unfit, we heard her say, to be president.
This is not someone who should ever have the nuclear codes, because it's not hard to imagine Donald Trump leading us into a war just because somebody got under his very thin skin.
Trudy Rubin, this speech went well beyond foreign policy, but it talked a lot about foreign policy. What did you make of it in the end?
Several things. First of all, I think that Hillary Clinton, the wonk, and her team obviously realized that Trump doesn't talk about any specifics on foreign policy, but makes mileage by punchlines. And so she decided to use punchlines and not get into details about her foreign policy ideas, which she has elaborated elsewhere. But secondly, most everything she said was factually accurate. In the Washington Post, their very respected fact checker went down through everything. And so I think her main points, which are accurate, are that Trump has basically attacked allies but made nice to frenemies or opponents. He praises
Putin. Tyrants was the word she used at some point.
He talks easily about nuclear wars in Asia. He had incredible remarks about if North Korea and Japan should have a nuclear war, well, go at it. And talks about withdrawing from NATO. So I think she actually hit on real issues, whether of temperament, whether he is fit to handle the nuclear codes. And frankly, if he talks so casually about these things, you have to wonder whether he has a grip on the seriousness of the issues. So I think she was quite successful in laying out the temperament part of the argument.
Donald Trump saying this isn't foreign policy, this is all politics. Here he was also in California last night.
You know, she's up there and supposed to be a foreign policy speech. It was a political speech. Had nothing to do with foreign policy. She made a political speech tonight, folks, and it was a pretty pathetic deal.
Well, there's no question it was a political speech, foreign policy in there as well, but Christina Bellantoni in Los Angeles, as a political speech, how would you weigh this? How different from her attacks up to this point on Donald Trump?
She was clearly in command of not only her own facts, you know, as we just pointed out, but also this is someone who has experience as Secretary of State. This is one of her strengths. And so she was playing to it. And it was a forum where she tends to do fairly well. And the campaign has made very clear they intend to eviscerate Trump on issues like this throughout the course of the campaign. And, you know, it's not impossible to imagine that, you know, generals or other top leaders that might normally side with Republicans would come down on her side, given her experience, given what Trump has said over the past. So that's interesting. One thing that I really followed was she didn't mention Senator Bernie Sanders, who is her rival right here in California, mm-hmm. and is certainly somebody that she's going to have to be thinking of for the next 4.5 days, at least.
No mention of Bernie Sanders last night. She's looking beyond Bernie Sanders. We'll come back to California and what she faces there. Jack Beatty, you heard Trump coming right back there. I mean, if you want to get into strong language, Donald Trump will go right there with you. And incendiary ideas, she has to go to jail, was his comeback. What did you make of all this, Jack?
Well, I agree with Trudy. It was a very effective speech and perhaps the best we've heard from Hillary this year, a political speech indeed. And, you know, her basic point was the dangerous incoherence. In other words, to say that Mr. Trump has a foreign policy really is wrong. He doesn't. I mean, I heard someone saying, well, he's like Robert Taft. It's, you know, American isolationism. Well, is it really? We don't know. What we do have are, you know, a sort of gumbo of conflicting statements, which raises the question of his judgment and his temperament. And this week we saw his temperament on display at a press conference at Trump Tower on Tuesday, where he was answering charges about he was being late in giving the money to the veterans that he had raised. And he really threw a kind of narcissistic tantrum. How would you dare accuse me of doing anything like this? You know, he was caught out by the Washington Post the week before. He promised to have given $1 million to this group. He hadn't done it. He quickly did do it. And instead of saying, you know, I was late, he just went into this, one can only call it a tantrum. The president of the National Press Club said any American politician who attacks the press for doing its job is campaigning in the wrong country.
Here was Trump, a little montage of some of those attacks. I mean, it was long, and it just went on and on. But here's just a little bit. In Trump Tower on Tuesday, when he was under scrutiny for the money that was promised to the vets, that there were big questions about when it got delivered, how much got delivered, whether he'd actually chipped in himself as he said he had. Here he goes, taking off on the press.
The political press is among the most dishonest people that I've ever met. This sleazy guy right over here from ABC. He's a sleaze in my book. You're a sleaze because you know the facts and you know the facts well. When I raise money, excuse me, I've watched you on television. You're a real beauty.
Christina Bellantoni, that's just a tiny sampling. This went on and on. I do not recall in my lifetime a serious candidate for the presidency ever interacting with the press in this way. I'm not here to say the press is perfect. But our country is founded on a First Amendment and the idea of a fourth estate that keeps tabs on what's going on in public life. What do you make of that exchange?
I found it incredibly troubling, the same amount of troubling that I found in San Jose on Thursday night when the Trump campaign ejected a reporter from Politico from the rally because his credentials had been rejected to cover it, which is also fairly unheard of. I mean, it's not that it's never happened, but there's a control of the media sense here that should be alarming for anyone in our business. And certainly, I agree with you, the media has a lot of faults. And certainly in the coverage of Donald Trump, I think that we have a lot to account for. But if you're holding a press conference, you should be allowed to ask questions. And in general, that's your job. And, you know, the press isn't giving it back to him in that same way. And it just there's a tenor at the rallies where he'll mention the press and boo them and the crowd will turn around and sort of heckle and hiss. And that's just it's a road I don't like going down.
Tom, yes, Trudy, please.
Add something to that. I think what hasn't gotten enough attention also is Trump's pledge to unilaterally, if he becomes president, introduce new libel laws that would make it easier to come down on the press, basically, if they criticized him. And that falls right in line with his approval of strongmen dictators. As you know, he praises Putin. He praises Xi. He has even praised the little dictator of North Korea, saying even if he murders people, he's a strong man. And so it's this strong man tendency. And libel laws are used to silence the media in places like Turkey, where journalists go to jail and
right now,
newspapers are basically bankrupted by using fake label laws as a club. That's the tool of an authoritarian ruler, and his authoritarian instincts come through loud and clear, both in the way he talks about foreign countries and, I think, in his approach to the media.
Would he do that as a sitting president? Here he was again in Trump Tower this week.
I'm going to continue to attack the press. Look, I find the press to be extremely dishonest. I find the political press to be unbelievably dishonest. I will say that.
Jack, Hillary with a big hip check this week, but Donald Trump doesn't quit and won't quit. We know from his record here. I mean, politically, does this end up pushing her dramatically forward? Or is it just one week's big speech and, hey, hang on?
Well, I think it puts a sort of money in the bank for her. We're going to hear this again and again and again, this line. And the line of temperamentally unfit, you know, that goes to the Barry Goldwater days and the Daisy ad. And it's aimed at Republicans who can be shaken loose. It isn't aimed at liberals. She's not talking. There's nothing there for them. It's aimed at Republican moderates or people, conservatives who are just worried that this man doesn't have the temperament or character to be president.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about a week in the news today. Hillary takes it to Trump. Paul Ryan endorses Trump. Texas floods. We've got the guerrilla uproar. Fallujah attack is going on right now. We'll look at that with Trudy Rubin, foreign affairs columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Christina Bellantoni is with us. She covers edits politics for the Los Angeles Times. Jack Beatty is here, and you can join us as well. What do you think? Temperamentally unfit Donald Trump to be president? Are you still with him? And what about when he calls a federal judge born in Indiana a Mexican? When you hear the charges around Trump University? What about next week in the big California primary? What does it mean if Bernie Sanders wins in California? And Texans, we are thinking of you. How are you coping with those unbelievable floodwaters? Let's get some callers right in here. Brad in Arlington, Massachusetts. Brad, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Once again, Hillary has shown herself to be the most competent candidate for president, where she gave foreign policy details. Trump just gave his usual slogans of hate, not even bothering to say why he disagreed with her. The polls that show Bernie beating Trump are meaningless at this point because Bernie is an unknown to most voters, where Hillary has been on the scene for 25 years. Once they get to know Bernie, he will not stand against Trump. And Trump is abysmally ignorant on foreign policy, and Bernie, I'm afraid, is not abysmally ignorant. He's just ignorant.
Brad, we've got it. We've got it right where you stand, and I appreciate your call. One more right here, Marie in Rutland, Vermont. Marie, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Let's see, Hillary. I don't know where to begin. First of all, her vitriolic, shrill, shrewish ranting should have been turned around back on herself because she is so guilty of everything that she accused Trump of. The media, Trump is allowed, this is a First Amendment right of speech. He can say whatever he wants. As all of you have proved, all of you in the press do nothing but rip the man to shreds, and he is merely defending himself.
Not fair, Marie, not fair there, but I hear you. But as president, do you think that's the right relationship for a president to have with the press?
If it's honest and he calls them out, why not? Why is it that President Obama can go to every country and disparage this country to other rulers and
not
leaders?
True, Marie. Not true. I mean, he's said lots of things, but doesn't just go and disparage. But I get it. You don't like Hillary's foreign policy. Trump can be vitriolic, but Hillary should not be, maybe they both shouldn't be. I got it, Marie, and I appreciate your call. One more, Carl in Nashville. Carl, you're on.
You know, that's a perfect Trump voter, you know. And I've said this for the longest now, for the last few months. No Republicans have been able to answer this, given the choice between a conservative like Ted Cruz and a racist like Donald Trump. The Republicans chose just that. They chose the racist, and there's nothing you can say to any of his people that support him. He can say no wrong.
You think Hillary's perfect? You think Donald Trump shouldn't have the right to criticize the press?
I don't think Hillary's perfect, but let me tell you what happened yesterday. Perfect analogy. My daughter and my son, my son was in the first grade, my daughter was in the third grade. A bully was trying to beat up my son, and my daughter beat him up. Basically, Donald Trump got beat up by a girl yesterday. Her speech ripped the bark off of him. Not only with her speech, was it a good speech, was it a good political speech, it used his words. Not only did she use his words, she sent out transcripts and sent out links to the actual words and videos that he said. That was perfectly politically orchestrated. It damaged him, I think, beyond belief. And when he got up on San Jose yesterday, and his response was just what she said. His temperament is not fit for presidency of the United States of America.
Carl, we've got it. I mean, Christina, here's the thing. A lot of Americans are not happy. They want change, and they think change has been difficult, and they may see Hillary Clinton as part of the status quo. Donald Trump doesn't come off as pretty. He may not be temperamentally lovely, but a lot of Americans that would appear, because, look, he's won, want something different.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing you hear regularly out on the campaign trail is people will say things like, yeah, I actually don't really like his foreign policy, or I don't know what his foreign policy is, or I don't agree with the things that he's said, the divisive rhetoric that he's put out there. But I really want to, you know, send a message to the Republican Party, or I want to shake things up in Washington, or I'm tired of the way things are done. And it's not all that different from a message that Sanders has put out there as well. But voters tend to forgive him for the lack of specifics and even for things they disagree with. I mean, we found our USCLA Times poll that's out in California. He's deeply unpopular in California. But even people that don't like his policies are saying, yeah, I will still vote for him.
Jack, how do you think that will stand up as we go forward here with this kind of criticism? If this is the way Hillary's going to go, and she, as you say, she's calling out to maybe independents or moderate Republicans saying, do you really want to go down that road? But this is in the same week, not just the same week, the same day that Paul Ryan turns around after resisting for so long and says, hey, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, Speaker of the House, Republican.
Yes, and that's emblematic. 85% of Republican voters are now firmly behind Mr. Trump. That's just about the same percentage that at this point were behind Mitt Romney. I mean, that's in other words, for Republican voters, he's a normal candidate. And Hillary is trying to say he's not normal. This guy isn't up to it. You know, what Trump has going for him, however, and he tweeted it this morning, terrible jobs report, he tweets, just reported only 38,000 jobs added, bombshell. That is a bombshell. That's terrible economic news.
Yes, it is.
And that is a great point for him to push and push hard.
I mean, 38,000, that's the lowest in something like 6 years. Trudy, I hear you there.
Yeah, what I was going to say, I mean, the jobs figures have gone up and down. This was a bad one. The previous one was very good. So it may just be a correction. But what I think that Hillary Clinton has done, and what I think is very important, whether or not it was she who did it, is to try to get a message out that his foreign policy is dangerous. I think people, perhaps his supporters, have not paid enough attention to really what he is calling for. In his foreign policy speech, it was basically a come home America speech. His approach to the world is either you do it my way or A, I will bash you, and because I'm Trump, it will all be fine. Or B, let's jettison the allies, deal with dictators, and just stay home. And I think people haven't understood the recklessness of it. For example, he talks about bashing China, basically. I'll make them do what I want. He talks about I'll destroy ISIS quickly. And clearly, he has no concept either of diplomacy, tough diplomacy, or the battle against ISIS. And that's sort of scary because it leaves one wondering, how is he going to deal when all of this rhetoric proves to be totally misconceived? And he's, if he were the president, he has to actually do something. And it makes you wonder what he would do. Would he strike out because he doesn't understand the world?
Mark in Acton, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Mark. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I want to talk about an aspect of the Trump University story that I found very troubling. Early in the week, Trump attacked the judge, calling him a Mexican. And when the press reported that, in fact, he was born in Indiana, Trump, instead of correcting himself, doubled down and said yesterday that he was of Mexican heritage and belonged to a Latino Lawyers Association. And then he said, quote, "I'm building a wall. It's an inherent conflict of interest," unquote. And I found it shocking, but not surprising, that he would go to the well of racism to diminish respect and undermine the confidence in the American judicial system. And I have a question for your, particularly your political reporter.
Yes.
And that is, how does the Republican Party feel knowing that its presumptive nominee has gone on record telling Latinos and Hispanics that they shouldn't vote for Republicans because it's an inherent conflict of interest?
Christina Bellantoni, we had Mitch McConnell on this week talking with him about his life when he didn't vote for Barry Goldwater way back in the day because Goldwater was against the Civil Rights Act, but he's with Trump now. We heard Republicans after the last election say, we got a problem here with Latinos. And you hear the question from our caller.
Well, the Latinos love Trump, remember? No, and in fact, they
don't.
So
says Donald
and
Trump. Yeah.
One of the things that we found in our poll that was released this morning is that 80% of Latinos in California not only do not like Trump, but do not like him by a lot. And those are numbers that the Democrats are counting on. Now, it's not surprising that the Republicans and people in leadership are going to ultimately, whether they go out and campaign for him or it's just an endorsement or they say they're going to vote for him, that's pretty standard, right? You know, that's what ends up happening. Mm. And the question is, you know, how sincere is that effort? How robust is that effort? Trump says he doesn't really need them anyway. But it does send a message to voters of color and to people that have heard the types of things that Donald Trump has said, and that is viewed as a proxy for the Republican Party, and that's something the Democrats intend to exploit in a country that is changing. You know, there are Clinton pollsters that believe that if Hillary Clinton wins just the same share of the white vote in Florida that Barack Obama won in 2012 against Mitt Romney, that she would win Florida by 8 points because of demographic change there.
Wow.
And the new voters that are there. And so, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. But when you look at the way the Electoral College map shapes up and growth in states that have fewer and fewer white voters and the share of the white vote that's available for Republicans, that's not a lot of room for error. And that's a numbers game. And then you get into the whole fact of the Republicans saying they needed to reach out more to Latinos and, you know, their efforts to bring the party together on some of that messaging. And not to mention, this is a party that not that long ago put forth a comprehensive immigration reform plan that the president said he would have signed. I mean, that got through the Senate. That's a big deal.
Not that tone right now. Of course, the comments about the judge came after he released all the documents in this Trump University case that's ongoing. Hillary Clinton picked up on that. A lot of complaints there from people who had gone through that university about it's fraudulent this and that. She called Trump a fraud yesterday, said he would rip off the American public. We had the New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman talking with NPR's Morning Edition. He's leading a lawsuit against Trump University in New York. And he said that the university's pitch, Trump U pitch, was deceptive, fraudulent.
Essentially every part of the pitch was false, and it's fraud to induce people to pay money based on false representations. And that's really the essence of the case. It's not a very tricky case.
But the judge who put those documents out, this was a rally last Friday in San Diego. Trump laced into him overseeing this lawsuit, Gonzalo Curiel, calling him, the judge, a hater.
I have a judge who is a hater of Donald Trump, a hater. He's a hater. His name is Gonzalo Curiel. And he is not doing the right thing.
Mexican, said Donald Trump. Kashif in Sudbury, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. So, as a Muslim, I just want to say that Trump is just a Taliban version of Republicans.
A Taliban version of Republicans? What do you mean?
I mean, whatever the way Taliban are representing Islam and Muslims, Trump is doing the same thing for Republicans. So he is not the right candidate, and I don't know how Republicans are going to deal with this guy. Because Republicans, like North Koreans and Germans who used to love Hitler, now Republicans, they love this guy. They are going to represent, make this guy their representative. But it's going to be a big problem for them in future.
We'll see where it goes. There's clearly lots of misgivings in the Republican Party about exactly how this unfolds. And yet, there are the votes for Donald Trump, and Americans just unhappy with the status quo. And, of course, that's hit the Democratic Party as well. We've got the big primary coming up in California. We had Bernie Sanders out there. Kashif, thanks for your call. Bernie Sanders in California on Monday telling supporters there he's going to win the Democratic primary in the Golden State.
Promise not to tell Secretary Clinton. She's getting very nervous lately. And I don't want to add to her anxiety. So if you promise not to tell her, we're going to win here in California.
We're going to win here in California. Is he? Could he, Christina?
It's not impossible. Certainly our poll shows that it really depends on who shows up. One of the things we know right here in Los Angeles County, in fact, there are more than 330,000 new registrants, people who signed up to register to vote in the short period that closed last week. Of those people, 61% are under the age of 20. Now, you can read into that statistic, given how Sanders has performed with young people over the course of this primary, and say, those are Bernie Sanders voters. That's a lot of people. That's changing the electorate here in a place where we're not used to getting a competitive presidential campaign, and he could very well win. But the question is, his bar to get voters to show up is much higher. He's looking at declined to state voters, voters who do not have a Democratic registration, getting them to the polls and keeping them interested, and younger people. And so traditionally, that has been a harder two groups of people to show up in a Democratic presidential primary. Now, California, we have a little added kink in that in the Democratic primary, independents or these declined to state voters can vote. Except they have to request that ballot. So many people vote by mail here. They get their ballot. It will just be blank when it comes to the presidential race, unless they say, I would like to participate in the Democratic presidential primary. So it's an added layer that could prove difficult for the Sanders campaign. And the Clinton campaign is not taking anything for granted. They actually scrapped some of her events in New Jersey to spend more time in California. There's 30 events planned between Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton Wow. over the next several days because they really want to win here.
Does it change the delegate math if Bernie should pull it out in California or not?
It won't. There is no mathematical way that he could get enough delegates, even with a large win here. Clinton won in 2008 when it wasn't exactly competitive. It was held much earlier, and John Edwards had just dropped out of the race, but he was still on the ballot. She defeated Barack Obama here by 8.5 points, and her delegate net, I think, was maybe 45 people. What it does change, or 45 delegates, what it can change is the popular vote total, right? This is something where Clinton has a strong foundation to say, I've won so many more popular votes than he has. Yes, he's won these caucuses or small contests, but, you know, I have the popular vote command. But if he wins, you know, even by a little bit of a margin, that's a lot of people in California, a universe of 17 million voters.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, two military show planes, one from the Navy's Blue Angels, one from the Air Force Thunderbirds, went down in Colorado and Tennessee. Unrelated incidents. The pilot in Tennessee died. The pilot in Colorado ejected and survived.
Dismissed!
Numerous callers reporting the aircraft is down. Pilot ejected.
700 reported migrant deaths in the Mediterranean this week. Italian rescuers say they've saved more than 10,000 migrants at sea in the same week. Most are coming from Libya and Egypt.
I've got two of them in the raft, a rescuer shouts.
Come on!
Sit down, please. Okay, you're safe. We are going to pick the other.
A new surge there. Rains in Texas have pushed the Brazos River to record levels. It's flooded hundreds of homes, including Richmond resident Oscar Lozano's. He says that it may be time to find a new place to live.
It's slick. Don't fall down.
With the way that it's been going last year, the year before, just a month ago, I think we're going to have to think about moving, at least to higher ground. Further away from the Brazos River.
We are looking at a week in the news. Hillary takes it to Trump. Paul Ryan endorses Trump. Texas floods, guerrilla uproar, Fallujah attack, and Raqqa, for that matter, are going on. Trudy Rubin is with us, foreign affairs columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Christina Bellantoni from the Los Angeles Times. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What are you thinking? Is the first Zika baby with microcephaly is born in the U.S.? The first U.S. Olympic athlete says he won't go to Rio, to Brazil, for the games there. Are you watching the battles against ISIS in Fallujah, in Raqqa? Did they have to shoot the gorilla in Cincinnati? And what were you thinking with the shooting and lockdown at UCLA? Like, here we go again. We touched briefly on the new jobs numbers out today for the month of May. Pretty lousy. 38,000. That is the fewest number of workers added to the economy in 6 years. And it came just a couple of days after a speech in Elkhart, Indiana, where President Obama had delivered a fervent appeal for a Democratic successor and listed the economic achievements of his presidency.
By almost every economic measure, America's better off than when I came here at the beginning of my presidency. That's the truth. That's true.
Jack, that may be true, but if we headed into some kind of slowdown this summer, it's not going to ring so happily for a lot of Americans.
No, the president, his approval rating has ticked up. He is now at 50%, which has been it's been some time since he's been there. And he was trying to cash in, really, on his new popularity and pointing to the economy. And true, Elkhart, unemployment rate when he first visited as president, 17%. Now 3.8%. Prosperity. He cited the stimulus. He cited other things that they had done. However, wages in Elkhart have actually fallen since he was first there. Yes, there are more jobs, more people are working. Wages have fallen, and the prosperity is, everybody feels there. I watched the town meeting he had on PBS. They feel it's precarious. It still rests on the RV industry, those trailers, and that is a very that's old economy, and it's subject to all sorts of insecurities. And the president focused on that. He said, people were asking him, why is Trump getting such traction in places like this? And he said, because people in 2008 had the rug pulled out of their hopes and underneath their hopes and expectations. They simply were shaken by it, and they don't believe prosperity can last. Of course, in Elkhart, you could argue it really isn't all that real. The people's wages aren't going up.
They've got jobs, but not so many wages. Oil has been cheap, and so RVs have sold, and that's certainly come back. You go out to oil country, at least Middle Eastern oil country, and news this week out of Fallujah, and also interesting developments in Raqqa, but Iraqi forces trying to take back the city of Fallujah after more than 2 years of ISIS control. Here's a little sound from a Reuters report on Wednesday.
Iraqi forces take the fight to Islamic State on the outskirts of Fallujah.
Trudy Rubin, how big a deal is this? Do they look well poised to take it back? And that, I guess that's on the eastern or southern front of ISIS. What about on the western front, Raqqa in Syria, their sort of capital there?
Yeah, Fallujah is really a diversion. The U.S. and U.S. military was hoping that the Iraqi government would move first to try to take back Mosul.
The big city in the northwest of Iraq.
In the north. Mm-hmm. The two big cities that are in the so-called caliphate are Mosul in Iraq and across the border, Raqqa in Syria. Mosul is sort of the economic capital, if you will. It's the second largest city in Iraq. But the Iraqis don't have enough forces, and they're now being diverted to Fallujah, mainly because Iran and the Shiite-led government are more focused on Fallujah because it's closer to Baghdad, and car bombers come out of there and blow up things in Baghdad. So this is going to really slow down the fight to destroy the caliphate, i.e. up in Mosul. So really what's much more important are battles that are going on across the border in northern Syria. I was in northern Syria in March, and what's happening there is the U.S. Special Forces, about 300 now, give or take some, has been increased, are working with the Kurds in northern Syria, who are very motivated. And there are key battles going on now north of Raqqa. And the big question is whether enough Sunni tribal fighters can be brought in to join the Kurds, because Raqqa is a Sunni, mainly Sunni city. There are Kurds there. So that Sunnis can hold the city afterwards, so that it doesn't become an ethnic divide, Kurds going into a Sunni area. And actually, the number of tribal Sunnis is increasing as they see the U.S. is serious. And the fascinating thing is that the U.S. is absolutely disregarding Turkey and President Erdogan, who doesn't want the U.S. to help the Kurds. But the Kurds are solid fighters, and this mixed Arab-Kurdish force is making progress. So there's a town you've never heard of called Manbij, which is a key supply route from Turkey, bringing supplies down in Raqqa. Right now, this combined Sunni Arab and Kurdish Syrian forces are, with our special forces help, are fighting to take that town and slowly, slowly trying to strangle Raqqa. And my bet is that President Obama is thinking, wouldn't it be splendid if Raqqa fell during his presidency? But it will be a while, but that is the place to watch, not Fallujah.
Raqqa in the West. Back home this week, there was so much talk about the zoo in Cincinnati, where that young boy got into the gorilla habitat, that magnificent gorilla, got hold of the boy, was dragging him through the water, standing behind him there, and finally the zoo decided that they couldn't take the risk, and this magnificent creature was shot. Here's a little more than we heard at the top of the emergency call the mother had made after her three-year-old fell into the gorilla pit at the zoo over the weekend.
Hi, my son fell in the zoo exhibit at the gorilla. The Cincinnati Zoo, my son fell in with the gorilla. There's a male gorilla standing over him. I need someone to contact the zoo, please.
Okay, we do already have him started. We do already have the help started there, okay?
Okay. Be calm. He's grabbing my son. I can't watch this.
The mother was there with several children. She sounds pretty together, given the circumstances in that phone call. But boy, she caught a lot of grief from many, many people for not keeping control of her children, and her son in particular there. Here was just one. This is Sheila Hurt talking with MSNBC on Wednesday about why she started the online petition Justice for Harambe, the gorilla shot by the zoo, after the three-year-old boy fell into the gorilla enclosure.
I feel that if the mother was properly watching her child and not allowed him to go in there, and she should have taken him immediately out of the gorilla enclosure once it was let known that he wanted to go in there, this would not have happened, and Harambe would still be alive today.
Christina, I mean, this is not politics, this is not foreign policy, but everybody in the world seems to have an opinion on this one. The images were absolutely riveting of this magnificent creature, and we know what trouble gorillas are in Africa, standing over this boy, and humans trying to judge the level of threat to that boy at that moment and whether it was worth killing this tremendous creature to make sure that there would be no harm to the boy. I don't know if you've got an opinion one way or the other, but what do you think of what this has elicited? 500,000 plus signatures on Sheila Hurt's petition.
it's a heartbreaking situation one way or another, right? I mean, you no matter what, you know, negligence this woman may or may not have shown at the moment, I mean, she must have been terrified for her child. And it is horrible that this magnificent creature was killed. I mean, it's nothing really captivates the world like animals, right? It's something that we somehow find a way to all unite
behind. Especially now when we know how many are so endangered. We just did a show right here just a couple of weeks ago on lowland gorillas in Congo and beyond that are really in trouble right now. And here you've got one in our care, and he's now dead.
Right. And, you know, through no fault of the gorillas, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just really sad. And, you know, but you can't help but be fascinated and keep watching because this situation is just so compelling and heartbreaking.
Trudy?
And well, first of all, the video was so spectacular and so sad because, as many have commented, initially the gorilla seemed to be protecting the
yes,
boy.
Yes, yes.
But then he couldn't decide, you know, threat or baby.
Yeah.
And from what I've read, I'm no expert on gorillas, but if they had tried to stun the gorilla, it takes a long time. At least several seconds, maybe a minute,
for it to
take effect. Mm-hmm. And so the gorilla could have become angry and killed the child. So it was an impossible situation. And to me, the obvious message is that the enclosure wasn't protective enough against small children. Granted, this was the first child who got in there. But I think it's a little over the top to become furious at a mother with several children. Having a 2-year-old grandson who's very active, I know. A 3-year-old, unless they're on a harness, and she had several kids.
Yeah.
Protect the enclosure, it seems to me, is the message.
Let me go to Buffalo.
Protect it better.
Yes, please. Buffalo, next time, I hope. Buffalo, New York. Shira, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to the case is so tragic. My heart really goes out to this family. As a mother of children, any one of us could have been there. I mean, you know, we all are human beings, and we all look away for a moment, and most of the time we get lucky, and this is a horrible situation. But the way that people pile on now on social media and go after people and victimize them when they've made a mistake is really tragic, and my heart breaks for this mother and father.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sure, people really can pile on. They felt a lot of emotion. Motion to loss of that gorilla. Julie in Western Massachusetts. Julie, you're on.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think that the delay in the tranquilizer is certainly a compelling reason to have had to do a kill shot instead, and I understand that what is disappointing. Hopefully we can take away from this as parents. People need to be mindful of their kids. If you can't take care of them all in a group or otherwise, whether you are a parent or grandparent, you need to make sure you have others with you that can cover the territory. Kids are active. And
yeah.
That could not have happened in a matter of seconds.
Well, it happened awfully quickly. A witness has said, I did read that. I take your point. On the other hand, I mean, zoos are where families go, and you kind of imagine that a gorilla cage would not be that easily accessible by a 3-year-old. Still, I take your point. Jack, what did you make of that tableau, of that mighty creature standing over the little boy between his great front arms, legs? I don't know what you call them, arms.
Well, there was a moment there, wasn't there, of sort of interspecies connection, or one projected it.
Yeah.
But it was so precarious. Who knows what was going to happen next? I see that the Cincinnati police have handed their report to the Hamilton County prosecutor, and the prosecutor will say, I think later today, whether there are grounds for proceeding against the family for negligence. If I may venture an opinion, I hope they don't. Negligence is, I quite agree with the caller who said this, and Trudy as well, that it's over. Piling on people on social media for what was an accident, for what could have killed a little boy, and blaming the mother for that. I mean, that just seems to me to be, I'm all for preserving animals, especially species like gorillas, but we also need to, be mindful of the fact that accidents happen, and with children they happen in a blink of an eye, and all my sympathy goes out to that family and to that traumatized little boy.
Yeah, Trudy, may I ask you, here we are on the eve of the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre in Beijing, and we had this remarkable moment This week, the Chinese foreign minister was in Toronto visiting Canada, standing next to the foreign minister of Canada and in a joint press conference, and he berated a Canadian journalist for her question about China's human rights record. Here's just a little bit of his response, translated by The Guardian.
I have to say that your question is full of prejudice and against China and arrogance, where I don't know where that come from.
And he went on, and he went on, standing next to the Canadian foreign minister, who was sort of abashed or looking down. What is this about, Trudy? We're accustomed to asking tough questions to leaders of country, but to have him come down like a ton of bricks on a Canadian reporter who asked a pretty straightforward question about human rights, what's that about?
This is a very Trump-esque response, and this is why I mentioned Trump's affinity for strongmen. The government of President Xi has cracked down on media inside China to an extent much greater even than in previous years. The Chinese
and scholars
regime,
and bloggers and lawyers. And,
right, exactly. The Chinese regime and President Xi specifically are very much about total control. Even the blogosphere has shrunk. And so this is not unusual. Because even when American leaders go to China, reporters are tremendously constricted. This is more the norm. It's becoming ever more so. And let us hope it never happens here.
Watch out where the world goes. What a week. Trudy Rubin, foreign affairs columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're really grateful to have you along to look at it with us. Thank you for being with us today, Trudy.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Christina Bellantoni, Assistant Managing Editor for Politics at the Los Angeles Times. You're terrific, Christina. Thank you for joining us.
Have a great weekend.
You too. And Jack, thanks for being here. Good weekend to you.
Thank you very much.
On Monday, conservative big thinker David Frum is out attacking Donald Trump. We'll hear from him and from big Trump advisor Roger Stone. Stay tuned. This is On Point.